Good evening and welcome to the Glen Ullin Board of Education District 41 meetings this evening. It's August 12th, 2013. Time is 7:21. We have two public hearings followed immediately by our regular board meeting. We have the 2013-14 budget public hearing, and then we have the SIP waiver public hearing, and then the board meeting. So let's get started. Public hearing on the Glen Ullin School District 41 2013-2014 budget will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, please call the roll.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood? Mr. Elcher?
Here.
Mr. Baczynski? Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here. Mr. Kenwood and Mr. Baczynski cannot join us. They're out of town this evening and will not be able to call in or join us. The Glen Ullin School District 41 2013-2014 tentative budget has been on display and made available for public inspection beginning June 26, 2013. Notice for tonight's meeting was published in the Glen Ullin News, the Press, and the Lombard Spectator, doing business as Shaw Media, on Thursday, June 27, 2013. To date, the district has not received any questions or comments regarding the budget. The board will take action on the 2013-2014 budget during the regular business meeting that will follow. Are there any members of the public who wish to comment on the budget at this time? Hearing none, the public hearing on the 2013-2014 budget is now closed. Moving on, the public hearing on the 2013-2014 SIP waiver will now come to order. Public hearing on waiver or modification of State Board of Education rules and our school code mandates, school improvement days. The district's approved SIP waiver for full school improvement in-service training will expire at the end of the 2013-2014 school year, and the district would like to maintain the flexibility to have a full-day SIP should the need arise. The district has met all of its legal notice requirements, including publication on its website on July 29, 2013, publication in the Glen Ullin News, Press, and Lombard Spectator on August 1st through 2nd, 2013, by Shaw Media. Publication on the statewide public notice website is required by ILCS 5/2.1. Advanced written notices to AFSCME and GIA on July 29, 2013. And advance written notice to the state legislatures on July 29, 2013. The board will take action on the SIP waiver during the regular business meeting that will follow. Are there any members of the public who wish to comment at this time? Hearing none, the public hearing on the 2013-2014 SIP waiver is now closed. Okay, that's 7:24. We're just going to go right ahead. Call to order. The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Elger, would you do us the honor of leading us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood. Mr. Elger?
Here.
Mr. Baczynski? Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here. Public participation. We welcome your comments, but we'd like to remind you to limit your comments to 3 minutes. If you wish to address the board and your views have been substantially presented by someone else, which probably won't be the case tonight, please submit your written comments on the forms provided to Maureen Secker, the recording secretary. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? I see one. Maureen,
Cooper?
We know it's Mr. Cooper. go ahead, please.
Thank you. I may have to divide this and talk later on some of this. I'd like to thank the board for any part in upgrading the check listings to include descriptions. I'm hoping it is actually implemented soon. Also, now that you've decided to post the MasterCard bills, I hope you can tell me when this will soon start. Now it is time to start dealing with the absurd spending that I've uncovered. When do you, and a question I have would be, when do you audit the MasterCard bills? I have spent hours, as some of you know, pouring through these bills from the time frame November 21st through May 20th. I have posted questionable and egregious spending on GlenIslandForum.com. I have done your homework for you. You should be as much an expert on the waste as I am now. I've tried dialogue with the board president since late June on specifics that I have found, but I have just been pointed to the board's policies on the district's website. Since speaking tonight is only 3 minutes times two, and not a give and take, when is it my questions, concerns, facts, and accusations can be answered? There are violations of board policy that have occurred. Written authorizations to go over board policy limits don't exist. Meals charged by Dr. Reebok and David Scarmardo without any public benefit or purpose need to be reimbursed to us. Only today I found Jill Amrang, an assistant principal, charged us for a year-long membership to Export Fitness. Upgrades in travel, including charging us for early flight check-in and rental car upgrades, both by Karen Carlson, violate board policy. A screw-up in her hotel room at a conference in St. Louis, where we spent over $3,350 in hotel bills, and her reservation apparently disappeared. Instead of the hotel making good elsewhere, she went to the Westin and in a premium king-size room, charged us $262 and $282 a night. For
Jeff,
was $626 for 2 nights.
Jeff, can I interrupt you? You need to just stick to the facts and not try to put some innuendo that you may or may not think is true.
You know, I got these out of my FOIA, and they're under her.
And I've seen them too.
And she stated, if I thought that this was, that this was possibly not even close to being true, I wouldn't put a name on it.
Well, let's just stick to the facts, and we can draw conclusions later on.
Okay.
And I
do like that when people take me for granted, we can turn around, or we can take the finger. Somebody's got to take the finger, and somebody's got to point it. Because we won't have change until someone points a finger. I'm willing to point the finger.
But let's stick to the facts and be respectful, please.
And I'll take what you said into account. Okay. Where is the accountability after this point? I'll take what you said into account. Where is the accountability? Oh, I forgot. She's the assistant superintendent of accountability. I forgot about her valet parking bill. Not only breaks board policy, but all these things display the same thing. An entitled attitude that the taxpayers are just a bunch of chumps. Well, this chump is tired of the entitlement. Another administration member stayed at two hotels in Washington, D.C. that a rewards points number was on each bill.
30 seconds, Jeff.
Violation. There are trips to everywhere in this country, east, south, north, and west, including Vegas. There are gifts to people that the administration has visited. Over $430 in Garrett's popcorn, 11 gallons of it, the South Carolina administrators spent by the same person whose name I've already mentioned a couple times. A $2,000 trip to Waukesha, Wisconsin that included 8 drivers all getting mileage, and despite it being in a district an hour and a half from here, a visit that should have ended at school day's end. We got billed for 4 hotel rooms in downtown Milwaukee, nowhere near the school. Upgrades and rooms to include breakfast, of course, and of course, we had to pay for dinner, too.
That's time, Jeff. Could you please sum up?
I'll just finish the paragraph on that. For a day trip, it showed a total breakdown of oversight, which was supposed to be handled by the superintendent or Mr. Cicerella. In his defense, there would have to be 2 of him to keep track of all this waste. I'll save the rest for later.
Thank you. Mr. Cooper, if you wish to stick around later on, I think Dr. Gordon might address some of your concerns in his superintendent's report later on. Anyone else? Okay, moving on. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates. Implementation of the 21st Century Learning.
I want to do a brief introduction. Karen, she's going to walk us through a number of the Team 21 initiatives, the thinking, the work that's gone behind it, the professional development that is ready for our teachers, and a number of other issues. With that, I think we're ready to go, and I'll hand it right over to you.
Okay, so I wanted to update you tonight kind of both on the summer work that's occurred with Team 21 and then anything connected with curriculum and implementation. And Erica is part of Team 21, so you may either want to jump in or at the end ask your own information. So this highlights kind of the 4 main topics of discussion that we had this summer. The group met for about 51 hours, Most of it was back in June, and then we resumed our work late July, early August as well. We're going to meet again later this month and early September in order to be ready to go with a recommendation. Do you have a question?
How many people are in the group?
About 25.
Mm-hmm. So it's 25 people who met for roughly 51 hours.
Not everybody was able to make it just because we met so consistently, and obviously there was just somewhere in that. Mm-hmm. But
there's a lot of people.
Including our parents, parents as well.
So it isn't just 51 hours. It's a lot more man hours than that.
And then I will be sending an update to the community on the work of Team 21 that will come out in probably the next week or so as well. So the first area I want to address is really the parent-teacher conferences. This year you'll see no changes at grades K-1 and 6-8. K-1 meets with parents for 20 minutes, and at Hadley they've always done 5-minute conferences per subject. So literacy, obviously, because they teach two subject areas, those are about 10 minutes long in that. At levels 2 and 3, both the parents felt strongly about being able to meet with both teachers, and the teachers felt strongly about wanting to be able to meet with all of their parents. So they're going to do the 10-minute conferences so that they can meet with each teacher. We did talk a lot about student-led conferences. Currently, we have a number of teachers who do student-led conferences, even as young as first grade. We want to encourage and support those teachers to continue to do that. And we'll work towards implementing student-led conferences across the board, but we kind of put that as a 2-year goal. Just wanted to be sure we've got a lot of other things going on.
So, Karen, sorry, in every grade, student-led conferences?
Mm-hmm. Even though we have teachers at Hadley who've done some student-led conferences, and like I said, first grade and at all different grade levels. We probably wouldn't go there in kindergarten. And first grade might be a little bit optional. We kind of had different opinions on some of our first grade teachers that were in the team doing that. So that'll be a goal of ours. And for this year, too, we're exploring an idea of stations for parents to visit in between their conferences in case they couldn't get back-to-back. And we would want them to schedule a literacy conference and a math conference back-to-back because of getting to and from, it would kind of cut into their 10 minutes of time type thing. So, and we're looking at an alternative sign-up structure. We'd like to use something online. Hadley has been using an online structure, and we do have kind of a portal with Skyward. So Gail Mekas and Mike Wood are already looking at that we could probably implement this year. That would give parents that opportunity. So we'll have that set because typically parents sign up right at curriculum night, so we probably alter that a little bit. We also spent quite a bit of time on professional learning communities for PLCs, and our teachers have been meeting in PLCs for a number of years. And when they come together in a PLC, they typically talk about 4 questions. What do we want all students to learn? How will we know if they've learned it? How will we respond when they don't learn it? And how will we respond when they already know it? Obviously, they don't talk about all 4 of those questions every time they're together, but over the course of their meetings, they'll address those 4 things. And so as we kind of came together, we did talk about the how we value PLCs, and the PLCs are really a culture. It's not a program. And we wanted to kind of honor the work that has been done. And so we did create building schedules for all 5 of the schools. This became more cumbersome, I think, than we thought it was going to be, but we were trying to create opportunities for different groups of teachers to be able to come together and to be more inclusive. In the past, our ESL teachers, our special ed teachers, our music PE haven't always been available when the PLC was meeting. And this new structure kind of allows those different groups to come together kind of over the course of, kind of on a rotation over 4 weeks. We did talk about wanting to wait until the end of first trimester to really make any substantial changes to the schedule. However, if there's anything glaring or there were some conflicts, we would clearly want the buildings to make those tweaks and that along the way. And again, we'll gather feedback on this as well. The other thing we discussed was the important role that the buildings play in a PLC. A lot of the buildings have spent a lot of time kind of creating certain structures in place. They want them to use certain templates and that. If we don't want to undo that, we want to encourage them to continue to use the structures the buildings have put into place. But we have identified some additional resources within that PLC toolkit for those that want to start looking at some other alternatives or are looking for some different structures to put in place in that. And because we have different groups coming together when they're in PLC, they'll be kind of evolving, or sometimes you'll have a larger group in that. We are asking the buildings to identify kind of a core group of norms that all PLCs would use, and then kind of that heart of the PLC would add to it with their own norms.
Karen, if I can just make a comment about this. This was a set of meetings that I think both Amy was able to be at, one of our parent representatives, but also myself, because it fell into a time for us. And I want to, for the board and certainly for folks here too, let you know that this was a really, at least out of those 4 days, we spent a good, I think, 2.5-3 just on the PLCs, really reconfirming, affirming the role. And the professional learning community model is used not only in the elementary but also at the high school level, and students leave every Monday, are dismissed early at 1:55, so that teachers at the high school level also meet in PLC. So there's a nice alignment with our high school partners as well. This was for me, a really edifying conversation, in part because we talked a lot about professional learning communities and the value, but hearing from the teachers who were there and the staff too, this coming year in particular, they're excited that PE, art, music will be able to have some voice, and worked really hard also at building in ESL, our other social workers, et cetera. So I just want to let the board know that this was both a broad but also a deepening of the work of professional learning communities in the district, which is really where I think care of the individual student also comes into play in a much deeper level. So that was a big takeaway for me in terms of our work on this and the scheduling that we did and figuring it out. So
the Team 21 members then will share their individual building schedules at one of the institute days as well. So the evaluating the 21st century learning piece, we created an extensive list of what will be monitored and evaluated, and then we looked at each of those from a fidelity perspective. Did we do what we said we would do? From a satisfaction perspective and from an impact perspective, what were the effects? We then developed a general timeline and who would be responsible for what, kind of collecting that data, and what groups we were looking for that data from. We did know that we would be able to adapt and use some of our existing evaluation tools, and we will whenever possible, but then we also kind of created some other tools in that to just help kind of that monitoring piece. Since there are so many pieces of it that we want to look at, there's a lot of different groups and that, so we're trying to create some checklists and things like that just so that BLT can stay on top of it, Team 21 can stay on top of it. Some of the information we need may just be from the principal, it might be from the PLCs themselves, things like that. So we'll begin to kind of document that and track that over time as well. So we do have kind of that basic systemic evaluation plan, and we'll continue to fine tune it. There were a couple of things that we want some feedback on right away that we've gotten out to the principals, and they'll start gathering that. The list was pretty large, and at one point we realized, you know, we were going to kind of be looking for some of this information from teachers kind of every month, and we want to be respectful of that PLC time and that they're still able to do their work in addition to gathering kind of the feedback that we feel that we will need as well.
So the timeline is that developed now? So for example, if you're asking for feedback, are you going to be is it monthly? Is it quarterly? Is it
some things are monthly, some are quarterly. Obviously, around impact, which would be student data, you're not going to get in the very beginning. You probably take a look at it, even though we thought we have those math data points and things like that. But there's other pieces that are just some of the things we asked. Was every teacher able to specialize? Some of those were just now, we just need information on. They'll kind of assess how the little slight change in meet and greet went. So each of the building principals has a plus Delta RX sheet. They'll kind of get that data from their staff and send it back to Team 21. We've got a spreadsheet we created that really identifies who we're collecting the data from and how often. So there's a tentative timeline. We just need to kind of go through and say exactly what we're doing in each month. And we had some groups doing that, so everybody turned it in. Their months were written differently, so we're just going to kind of get it consistent so we can do a better job of sorting it to know what we'll be collecting along the way.
So is it everything from like the basic things of, you know, are the kids going to their right rooms? Are they putting their pads, coats mm-hmm. in the right places? Mm-hmm. To more in-depth things, for example, every unit that kids do, whatever the unit may be, is it that specific of an evaluation?
Yeah. The first things you mentioned, we call those or refer to those as logistics. And some of those things, even by the time we get the data back, teams and building administrators will already probably problem solve those, because a lot of those are what we call typical things that come up every year that you need to react to immediately and do something. And I often use the example, when we rolled out hot lunch last year, after the first day, many of the buildings stepped back and said, okay, we need to tweak this. Just because it's all of that in the moment. You know, I remember when Lincoln was starting school and all of a sudden I think the main road there was torn up or something. They had to come up with another plan. So we're trying to be cognizant and respectful of what those typical kind of in-the-moment problem-solving buildings have to do and what we need. We wouldn't want them to wait to give us feedback before they change anything. They need to fix it. But we want to know kind of what they've worked on and what they've learned. And teachers expressed an interest in having opportunities to come together to learn, how did you organize the materials, some of those, you know, things, and how are you communicating? And so we're going to try to build those in along the way.
So a concern for me, and I think it has been all along, is the keeping on top of the process and the evaluation. And really, if it's like December, not the end of the year, and something is obviously, or maybe not even that obvious, but something's not really working like we thought it was going to work, is there flexibility in our timeline and evaluation that we can take a look at it and make some changes mid-year?
Well, I think some things you're going to have to change right away. I mean, you wouldn't let kids, you know, be walking all over the building and taking 20, 30 minutes to get where they need to be and let that go all year. You want to intervene early. We talked a little bit about, you know, how long do you give it. When we rolled out Hadley New Horizons and we're working with Ron Williamson, he had said, don't change anything for 3 years. And Hadley kind of talked about that. And we said we weren't going to wait that long. But I guess it would depend on what's not working and how you would define it's not working.
Right. But we'll be flexible enough that we can look at it and take a step forward or backwards or whichever right. if we need to do that.
Again, this conversation was at the heart of, for teachers especially, and there are parents in the room here who have raised concerns with evaluation, and I'm, you know, I think it's important to raise this, and I'm glad that you're here. Because one of the deeper parts of this conversation, to your point, Sam, was let's make sure that we're addressing the things that we heard consistently over that span of, you know, 5-6 months where we had public testimony. We talked about those issues. We, you know did our talking points, and then we heard over and over again certain things. Those have risen to the surface, and this is what Karen's, you know, I think, describing. So it's logistics. Which is our operation stuff, and it's every building is going to have to turn in the moment. The principals who are on Team 21 are Scott Klesvitz from Churchill and Linda Schweighofer from Lincoln, and both of them reiterated in their own way, along with the other two principals, Kirk and Mary, that, you know, they're certainly going to be shifting as they need to. So, yes, to answer your question, flexibility built in. I think when Ron Williamson talked about not changing things, you know, for 3 years, it was the philosophy, you know, it was the practice, the PLCs, et cetera, those had to embed. you know, we're not talking about letting things go when we clearly as a district see, you know, this is Team 21 talking, not Erica, but the Team 21 group wanting to have, you know, real fidelity around the evaluation process. And then the other pieces are around this you know, kind of systematized evaluation plan. And like all Team 21 conversations, when we start a new topic, it's huge with tons of flip chart, and then it starts to focus itself down like a funnel to really get at what are the key elements. And some of those also, to your question, I think, is around the activities in the classroom. We worked really hard as a district in my time here. I think it's improved tremendously since my kids were here, like 15 to 16 years ago, to have parity. We talked about this. And that was a big part of our discussion as well. So I wanna lay to rest concerns that this was a 2.5 hour conversation. It wasn't. This was whole week and more days around those 51 hours that we've spent in the summertime. And we'll continue this. So it's an evergreen process because evaluation is just that. But very, very, very clear from the teachers and staff that they want to make sure that parent concerns are addressed. So.
And the final area that we spent quite a bit of time on was the study of time. And this outlines really some of the key components of what we did through this work and that. But we had study groups, we reviewed research and some of the literature out there. We did some comparison or comparing around the amount and use of time. We were able to locate particularly some international averages. The one area that was harder with that was really the use of that time. It was hard to kind of pull apart things like recess and some of those things. But at least we were able to kind of look at more global data around that. We did do a lot of an analysis of how we are using our current time, particularly in the area of core time versus non-core time in that. Obviously maximizing time in our day in that. We did look at both the elementary school day, and we talked about Hadley. The reason why we included Hadley was last year, Hadley began kind of talking and discussing both science and social studies, wanted 15 more minutes and things like that. So that was part of our discussion in that. So we did formulate a belief statement around time in the day in that, and we identified kind of a core group of recommendations that we're coming back to late August, early September to kind of refine and further articulate so that we're ready to go by mid-September with that recommendation. So this was a tough conversation, and I think the teachers would tell you that, but some good conversation. And we did a lot of kind of adding up those minutes and what we're doing and that. And our elementary days are all pretty similar, so I think that was easy. But so we hope to have, well, not hope, we will have something to do by mid-September. Mm-hmm. Learner characteristics. This is actually work that began with LLT, which was the Learning Leadership Team. That was prior to Team 21. We were known as the Learning Leadership Team. And we've been looking at the learner characteristics for a number of years. And so this is really carryover work that Team 21 will continue. So this year, students in grades K through 8 will complete a self-assessment. K and 1 will be on paper. And grades 2 through 8 will be online. And then they will do goal setting with the results of their self-assessment. And Hadley teachers will determine which class self-assessment will be taken in, and then that data will be shared with all of their other teachers. And same thing with level 2 and level 3. They'll make a decision which teacher will administer the self-assessment, but then the kids will share their goals with both teachers in that. So we want teachers to continue to incorporate the learning characteristics in the classroom. CIT did a beautiful job last year of highlighting how teachers have been incorporating that. And so we'll kind of want to continue to gather that evidence on that as well. And we are rolling out kind of the next set of 10 posters to add to that, and then we'll finish it up with the last 30. Probably we'll develop that this year to then be rolling out.
Mm-hmm. It was very impressive at the end of last year when we did the project-based learning, and the students came in to talk about what they did and how this wasn't just something that we talk about here, but the students were talking about the learner characteristics and specifically pointing out what in the project they learned about it and how well it was adapting. So it's really taken hold.
It has, and we saw lots of great evidence of that by teachers at all different grade levels. So that's great to see here. Okay. So now the summer work updates and that. First, I want to remind you, too, that a lot of things in connection to the curriculum and where we were moving forward this year really began last year and, in particular, in the spring as well. So in order to help teachers feel more comfortable, they wanted, you know, to feel prepared in that. We gave them the option of coming together this summer, and they could come together with their literacy group or with their math group or as an entire level to work on those organizational things. How are we going to do supplies? When will kids move? Before lunch, after lunch, things like that. We've had a number of teachers who have elected to participate in that throughout the summer, and there's a few more groups who are still meeting, and we tracked who used those days, things like that. I had a few teachers who were looking for more time. We tried to keep it within the allotted time. So, and some teachers have not taken advantage of it. That was fine, too, because we said it was optional.
What was the allotted time?
Literacy and math could have 6 hours to come together to work as a team, and then the levels to work on that organizational could have 7 hours.
And the teachers who chose not to, will they have an opportunity like the week before school? Or?
During institute day time, they will. And some of the teams still had collaboration time from last year, and they did it in the spring just as part of their collaboration time that they normally would take. And I think some teachers have just kind of gotten together and have been kind of working on, or just with maybe one partner, not their whole team. And then kind of bring it. But they will have implementation time during the institute day.
So, sorry, when you're saying team, you mean grade level team within each school sort of deal?
Like all level three teachers, both STEAM and literacy. Because we wanted that consistency around behavior, some of those things. Mm-hmm. So, and we gave them some kind of like a general list of things to include when they got together. And the principals work with them on that as well. So in the area of literacy, last spring, in one of the think tank PowerPoints, there was a document that kind of just laid out a progression of sample standards that was kind of color-coded, and it highlighted the progression that you see of skills within the standards in that. And so what the literacy specialists did within the module work, particularly at level two and then even at level three, is they've identified what that grade level standard is, and then they've within the statement added to it to show how it's enhanced and going up to the next grade level. Mm-hmm. And that's within the different documents that the teachers will have to work with. And so our level two and level three teachers had their materials and the documents last spring. We've done a little bit of enhancing to it. The literacy specialist will actually come to you later in September to kind of show you in greater depth kind of how it all fits together, what it looks like, some of those things. We thought it kind of would be better to kind of have its own standalone presentation because there's a lot to that. So they finished Module A, but what the teachers have is they have an at-a-glance document, they've got the full curriculum, and then they actually have the deconstructed standards, which is what we really developed over 2 years ago when the Common Core had come out. So and teachers have been working with that for 2 years now, so we've just kind of enhanced and built upon that. And I think it's important to kind of keep in mind as well that we've had the workshop structure in place, and that will continue. The modules are really just the resource to that. But they'll kind of show you how that all works together. Again, with literacy and that, first grade had asked last year to kind of start developing their modules. We told them we're going to kind of wait. PARC, which is our assessment consortium, has not released anything specific to that. And so they're okay. What we're doing is just enhancing their unit. So their first unit we did with all of the first grade teachers who wanted to come together on growing the sense of story. So they'll be working with that on those institute days as well. And there aren't any changes for kindergarten moving forward this year.
So, Karen, just to back up just a little bit, how many modules are there?
Four. One, yeah.
So it covers a certain period of time or? Okay.
Partway out four. And we had lots of conversations. Do we go with three to keep it in line with the trimesters? And that's what Hadley opted to do, was to go with the three. Elementary wanted to keep the four. And so sometimes it runs into a second, another trimester, and that's okay. We tell teachers to just, you know, report out on as far as they are within that.
So B, C, and D are going to be developed on an ongoing basis?
B, C, and D are already developed.
Oh. Okay.
They're ready to go. This is just for the start of the school year.
Sorry.
And looking ahead, and all of level three is developed. They've just got a few four components for level two for the following year.
Okay.
As far as math curriculum work, math committee actually continued to meet this summer, in addition to those opportunities for people to come together and work and that. But they, literacy for a long time has had kind of the first 20 days, you may have heard of that, and that just kind of sets up your workshop model. So the math committee decided to develop kind of some essential lessons that really will build that math community. There's a focus on the mathematical practices. It really kind of sets kind of that framework for what your math block would actually look like, and it gets the kids used to it and comfortable with. So they are going to be doing those essential lessons across the board, K-5. We have a year-long plan already developed, and what they're doing now is going back and adding the details. So August, September is ready to go. Most grade levels have October ready to go. This year we're going to do both a pre- and post-assessment with every unit, and that allows them to really get to those four questions of the PLC, particularly around what are you going to do for those who aren't getting it, and what are you going to do for those who already have it. And then whether it's guided math or some form of that, they'll be working on. And I'll talk a little bit later on that when I talk about institute days, kind of the next steps and planning with that as well. With summer work for the math curriculum, in addition to, we had 10 teachers who were able to go to a math solutions conference this summer. It's a week-long intense conference. They do a phenomenal job. The feedback from the people who went felt it was some of the best professional development that they've been able to attend in a long time. They were so impressed, and they felt that they wanted all of their colleagues to hear it. We were able to kind of work with Lori and PBT to bring Math Solutions here for one of the institute days, and I'll have more information on that in a few minutes. So we do have that occurred this summer, and Hadley and our AEC, which is our Accelerated Enrichment Teachers, have done some work with Connected Math, because Hadley's going to work on piloting that and some more big ideas, which they were doing last year. But they have a Common Core version, so they've been doing some training around the Common Core version as well. And then in the area of science, we started last spring. The Next Generation Science Standards were released. But last spring, we got together and I kind of identified what units. Remember, it's the current curriculum for one more year. And then this summer, our elementary teachers had three days of working with also teachers from District 15, which are part of the feeder districts going into the Glenbards. And our Hadley teachers work with teachers from both District 15 and 16. And so they really started just understanding the framework. Every set of standards that's been released uses a different format, and it takes a while to kind of just figure out how it's laid out in that. So they spent time with that. They also did some work on identifying misconceptions that kids have in science, and kind of noting which concepts those tend to be around, and then they began deconstructing the standards from both the content knowledge and vocabulary as well. We still have a lot of work left to do. I'll be meeting with District 15 and 16 at the end of this month too, to kind of talk about next steps and to see where we're kind of going to branch off, because obviously as we continue to develop that curriculum, we'll want to have a little bit of our own take on that.
So is it like a coming down from the high school units backwards to kind of, you know, like the basic elements you need in high school, we then kind of go backwards in the curriculum to develop it that way? Or is
the next generation science standards pretty much laid it out exactly what they want you to be doing. One struggle some of our teachers had was that they felt like it was a little bit more surface level. They felt like what they had already been doing, and let's just use like around the planets, was a little bit more in depth. And when they looked at the new standards, they felt like it was, oh, I think our kids could do more. What we talked a lot about is, in this case, it's really getting them a strong conceptual understanding. Just knowing the names of the planets doesn't necessarily mean that they understand kind of how it all works in that. So we'll continue to, I mean, there's definitely prerequisite skills that kids will need to build upon in that. The teachers enjoyed it. You know, after the first day, they were really frustrated. They just kind of wanted to get in there and figure out what they can do and to kind of start writing units. And we really kind of slowed them down to really understand what's there and start unpacking them. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the third day, I think they had a greater appreciation for the work and a better understanding of it. So we have some decisions to make around at Hadley. And we don't know, and the state of Illinois has not officially adopted them. We're pretty sure that they will fairly soon here. But you have an option right now to say, you know, physical science will all be in eighth grade, life science will all be in seventh grade, or as it is now, where you hit the, all of those sciences over the course of the year. Teachers would prefer that you study all of physical science in 1 year and things like that. But if the state doesn't come down with a directive, we will have continued conversation, because my concern would be is that, and it could happen if a kid moves from another state, but if we choose to do a certain, kind of let's say, physical science 1 year, and if a child came out of the system that didn't, you know, came to us later, they may never have physical science until they get to high school and that. And we'll work with the high school as well as we plan that out to kind of see how that goes and what their recommendation is.
Well, and actually, I believe it was across the high schools, but I know at West at least, they remove physical science.
They did.
And they start right in biology or biology honors. So, you know, the fact that we're doing it at this level is important because they didn't see the value in having that course at the high school level. Because kids, many kids from Hadley, I think, opted out and went right into biology and biology honors.
Well, and you have to be sure you have at least a fourth year of sciences for
right.
kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we've always worked with, you know, with the high school as part of the work we do, and we'll continue to do that as well. So, the other thing, the teachers have been working, a lot of the STEAM teachers, they kind of condensed all those, you know, all those bins and that, their materials and that, and try to kind of get down to what they really need and things like that. And that has occurred in the spring, and some teachers finished it over the summer. So looking ahead to what our work will be for this year, we'll develop the modules E through H for level 2. So those are the next 4 modules we'll do. They'll be grounded in content as well. And then at Hadley, they're going to, they started modules. Their modules for trimester 2 and 3, they'll finish those as well as their common assessments. And we had common assessments this year for grades 3 through 5, and we'll continue with that. We'll continue to work with the first grade teachers and enhance their literacy units. We'll finish those math units, including the pre and post for each of those units. The math pilot at Hadley, kind of get feedback and touch base, see how that's going. I put next steps with PBL, and this connects actually to that bullet point, that second to the bottom. This, you know, last summer we had 60 teachers that were trained in problem-based learning, project-based learning. This year, about another 20 teachers came together, and it was really more of an opportunity to really work with their grade level colleagues across the district to develop a PBL, at least kind of one per trimester in that. So I've got a couple of teachers who are really interested in helping teachers kind of get that, kind of up and running or a little bit more consistent. And from simple PBLs, that could be with just a couple lessons to something that might be a little bit more extensive. But if you see down that second bullet point, on October 4, we will have approximately 60 superintendents from across the country coming to visit both Lincoln and Franklin. There'll be about 30 at each school. And they'll just spend kind of a morning just kind of seeing PBL in action. And the board presentation at Franklin highlighted the work they had done with project-based learning or problem-based learning. So that will kind of be a nice opportunity for them to really kind of showcase some of the things they're doing. October 4th is early in the school year, but we'll be meeting with both Kirk and Linda to kind of set that agenda for the day and that. But EdLeader 21 is hosting their conference in the Chicago area. So then they look for schools to have their superintendents do site visits for and that. We'll do the STEM curriculum for grade 6 through 8, the STEAM curriculum for the elementary grades. I should have mentioned earlier, too, we did have art, music, and PE teachers involved in the curriculum work this summer, just so that they can start thinking about how the arts can be integrated as well. And then the importance of staying up to date with PARC. Remember, PARC is the assessment consortium. Illinois is one of the governing states in that, so Illinois will be participating in some of their pilot assessments this year. We don't know, and they haven't announced, I think, which districts will be kind of able to participate, I guess. So it'll be important that we kind of stay up to date and see what's going on. And we'll share some of those highlights with the literacy and math teachers this fall at Institute Day.
So the PARC assessments aren't going to take the place of like the MAP testing or the ISATs or anything like that, are they?
Not this year. PARC will replace ISAT in the 14-15 school year. And then districts will need to make a decision on, you know, kind of keeping the MAP test or moving away from it. PARC has, you will have to take the third and fourth assessment. The third assessment falls about 75% into the school year, and then the fourth one is the 90% of the school year, so at the very end of the school year. They will have two other assessments that will be optional for districts to give, and what they said is those could be considered formative, so kind of inform where your kids are at to being on track for reaching kind of those end of the year targets. You know, our concern is to if you're doing four PARC assessments and we do three MAP, that's a lot of assessing. And we'll have to make a decision about that. The one thing we're a little disappointed in is that PARC is not going to have kind of a branching assessment like the MAP test does, where you kind of can really see that growth over time. They have said that they'll build in something that would allow us to see growth over time, but it won't be what we're used to. So I think until we get kind of more information, and I don't know if they'll release all four of their assessments the first year, but many, like all of our GCC districts use the MAP test. I mean, there's a number of us, and we'll have to kind of go back, and I think a lot of districts will be evaluating, do we keep it, or what do we do? And this year, because we have more technology, We scaled back on our MAP testing windows because we could. We don't need as much time. But we're just concerned about how much assessing we would be doing.
And that starts in 14-15,
correct. So, and I mean, right now they still plan to be on track and that. And I think I share, I don't know what group I shared it with you. We had some introduction of Common Core and ISAT this year. And ISAT has already committed they're going to change the test again next year and include even more Common Core type questions. So, again, a little bit of a moving target there. So, these are just kind of a broad blush at the Institute State Plan for the elementary teachers. And Lori has been working with the professional development team to really outline these days. But so our math teachers, they'll be immersed a full day in teaching mathematics through the Common Core, and that's through Math Solutions. So there'll be kind of a rotation of four different sessions that they will go through and kind of pick the four that they felt were really beneficial to them. And then the literacy teachers at levels 2 and 3 will be spending some time with their modules and kind of identifying with their win time, but they're going to really be looking at close reading, which is emphasized in the Common Core, and then using mentor text within the writing units, kind of nudge writers along and go further with their writing in that. Both groups will participate in a session on multi-age, obviously some summer updates. They will all have implementation time, and then some building-based activities, you know, the big back-to-school stacking and things like that. So, and Lori has more specifics if you need it, but all 4 days are pretty well defined for them within there. And then Hadley kind of follows a little different plan. They're going to have a presentation by Shauna King, and it's really Change Your Language, Change Your Life, and the New IQ. So I think Change Your Language, Change Your Life is half of the day, and the New IQ is the second half of the day. And then they're going to be applying what they learned on that second day. This fall, Hadley staff will rotate kind of through 4 different stations, and those are some of the different topics they'll be covering. The Google Apps, Hadley this year will have the Google Apps for all of Hadley staff and students. And Christina, I know, has been running a handful of teacher sessions around using Google Apps. And the elementary teachers, a lot of them have been going and are really excited and would like to do that. But every child needs a Google password, some of those things. So it's going to take us a little while. But so they'll do that day of rotations. And again, they'll have their summer updates and implementation time as well.
Karen, can I ask a quick question? You mentioned with the math solution that we brought that back to the district. How are we, or how might the teachers continue who attended to embed some of those strategies? Is that being built in through PLC time, or?
Well, and what we had is we had at least 2 teachers from each of the elementary schools,
right,
that we identified that'll kind of help support that. You know, last year we called them math ambassadors from the math committee, and the importance of taking what you do at the committee back to the building and helping others understand it. So we felt like as long as we've got a couple teachers at each school, that they can continue that learning, kind of the questioning. You know, so, a couple of their sessions, one of them is the talk moves, and it's really about the questions you ask kids to kind of push that problem solving and things like that. So we're hoping that those teacher leaders, through that work with the specialists too, they can keep that learning going throughout the year. And then just any questions? I just had a couple of things in there, but.
Can you tell us who Shauna King is?
Lori?
She actually was brought back, she was brought to us from the Hadley team when they were presenting at, it's not the National Middle School Association, it would have been the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Effort in this for their group.
Mm-hmm.
When our team went there to present, they heard a presentation by them, were so taken by the work that she had done that they wanted to bring it back. It's similar to the work that was done, not the same, but built on the same kind of concept as the work that was done last year when Dr. Brooks was here and spoke to the entire district about the power of mindset. This is using language with kids to help that mindset shift.
He's presented to District 87 faculty as well. Thank you.
Any other questions for Karen?
I got a question. This went through a lot of work and a lot of iterations and a lot of conversations over the last 18 months. When the school year kicks off and, you know, a lot of hours are put into it by a lot of people, but there was a lot of people that weren't able to attend some of those sessions, parents and community members. Again, from a start of the school year, is there going to be a, I always go back to my professional life, but you have an install, you have a hotline after the install goes in. Are we going to have where parents can call Friday afternoons, 3 o'clock, to say, hey, this is going well, or I've still got some questions, I still have some concerns, I know you're going through this change, but I've still got, the school year's kicking off, I'm still a little confused, you know, are we having this open line communication to allow parents of students that have started this program to pick up the phone, and somebody's going to be able to pick it up an expert, you know, not her teacher who may not be as, but of course maybe you or somebody else that can pick up that phone and say, yeah, okay, I hear your concern, I hear your questions, let me tell you how this works, or let me tell you in that situation why this went well or this didn't go well and what we're doing to address it.
I would say we didn't specifically talk about a hotline, that yeah. type of thing. Building principals just sent a letter to kind of, you know, to their parent communities, and they talked a little bit about some of the work that had been occurring mm-hmm. and kind of where they're at. At curriculum night, we're going to have some kind of consistent information to share with all of the parents and that. And we've talked a little bit about kind of creating some things to put on the website too, whether it's, you know, the PowerPoint with voiceover that would help kind of explain some of that detail mm-hmm. in that. And I think there's some questions that'll probably need to be answered by the buildings, because each building will kind of have a unique way in which they're going to kind of problem solve. But district level things are things that are consistent, and that in evaluating 21st century learning, we talked a lot about even though buildings will problem solve and address the needs of their parent community, we still want to be able to bring that together to be able to look for themes. Mm-hmm. You know, did it just occur at one school, or was this something we saw at all of the buildings? Mm-hmm. Because that would inform how we would do things differently.
So I just reiterate, I think the building principal is going to be that first line of conversation with parents. But as a district, we're going to have consistent communication. As we started our communication this week with the at-the-glance that are on the website, the principal letter going home, and then we'll follow that up later this week with a letter from Karen. We're going to continue that communication. There will be pieces on our website. I met today with Ken, our webmaster, just discussing the website itself and that it's there for ease for our parents to be able to access and understand exactly where we're going. Karen just mentioned a PowerPoint that we put together as we were talking with a couple parents about some of their concerns, and I thought it was a very useful PowerPoint. And one of the things that we're looking to do is have a voiceover, so we're really talking directly to the parents, and there is one more tool there. So we're going to try to put as many tools as possible. Principals are going to be that line of conversation, classroom teachers, but then the most important thing is that we're trending the data. The incredible work that went into the evaluation tool, the time I was able to sit in there for a brief period during one of those days, and the incredible amount of thought and detail that went into the assessment, it will be a huge factor for us to continue to watch those trends over time, and then at the district level to say, okay, let's address this piece here.
So we
do have a way to be able to have conversations with our parents. I continue to have conversations with parents. Meeting Thursday night or Wednesday night, one of these nights this week at 7:30 with a group of parents. So I want to continue that conversation.
We didn't mention one thing, Karen, though, in the evaluation conversation, and there was that portion around the parent evaluation. And so maybe that speaks a little bit to what you're asking as well, Patrick, that part of that plan is also identifying the areas where we'll want parent feedback specifically, and then again seeing how that trends. So we had a really deep conversation, kind of pulled the onion back on what are those key things, back to that those 3 points: fidelity, satisfaction, and impact, and making sure that we're, you know, putting it out there for parents as well.
I guess I would just like to have the opportunity in October, November, you know, break, some type of break to, I just remember not being on the board, but being in a lot of those meetings, the participation was large. We had to move to large rooms to have these conversations. I would just like to have a post-conversation in October, November to, you know, let's have it at a big site again. We're moving forward. Decisions were made. Progress is being done. We're 3 months into it. we want to hear everybody's thoughts again. You know, open forum, we've done it, we did a couple of those, but we're not changing our mind, we're moving forward, we're taking steps, but we want to hear you. I appreciate, you know, I'm going to go to the website, I'm going to read the documents, that's just the kind of person I am.
But not,
not all, not everybody is.
I would agree.
So let's give that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other?
I just want to say to Karen and Team 21, the amount of work, the amount of thought that has gone into this, as you see the detail here, you may agree, disagree with the ideas, but the thought and the time and the people that are putting this together, I just so appreciate everything that you guys have done to move this to implementation, ready for our teachers to walk in one, and then our students following that. So thank you for all of your time, your effort, to the entire Team 21 in the thinking. It's a pretty huge undertaking.
Any other questions or comments for Karen?
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Karen. Okay, action items. Consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, which include the Human Resources Personnel Report, which we have an updated copy of in front of us. The personnel report includes the employment recommendations, resignation, and resignation and retirement. The finance, facilities, and operations report, which includes the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly review, expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism / damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2012-2013 FOIA report, the serious safety hazards report, the authorization to prepare the 2014-2015 budget report, and other matters, including board meeting minutes, the amended minutes from the May 13, 2013 regular meeting, the June 24, 2013 regular meeting minutes, the June 24, 2013 regular meeting closed session minutes, the July 17, 2013 special meeting minutes, and the July 17, 2007 special meeting closed session minutes. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Nelson, second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion passes. Superintendent's recommendation. The adoption of the 2013-2014 budget. The public hearing on the 2013-2014 budget was held earlier this evening. The board has discussed the budget in the Finance Committee and and heard a presentation at the June 10 board meeting as well. The board approved placing the budget on the public display at its June 24th meeting, and there have been no comments to date. May I have a motion to approve the adoption of the 2013-2014 budget?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elger, second by Mr. Escalante. Discussion.
Thank you, Bob, for answering all the questions between all these meetings and the summer especially. Thank you.
Especially for some of the new members who asked a lot of stupid questions and you had patience with us.
No good questions.
No questions, a stupid question.
No, I think we tested some of them.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Anything else? Roll call, please, Mrs. Tucker.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. Approval of application for waiver or modification of the school improvement days. Public hearing was held earlier in the evening on the district's application for a waiver or modification of State Board of Education rules and their school code mandates for full school improvement in-service training. I have a motion to approve submission of the waiver to the State Board of Education for transmission to the General Assembly.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Discussion.
Straightforward.
Yeah. Okay. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stepp.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Superintendent's report.
All right. Start with board policy 4 55 regarding expenditures, the P cards, the check registry. And I'll be asking Bob to join me in the conversation. But I would start with a comment of saying, at times, some of the comments that are made publicly or on other forums insinuate that there are some bad people in this organization. And I have to sit, I have to stand here and tell you, these are some really great people. Some amazing individuals who work tirelessly. I would ask that the community, that the board, hold me accountable for the expenditures. The expenditures only occur at the superintendent's discretion. But these are incredible people. The teachers who are out purchasing, looking for reimbursements, every item is legitimate. Every item is beneficial for the betterment of District 41. It frustrates me a little bit when we mix the two things with the individual as opposed to maybe the expenditures of the funds. And I'm okay with people questioning the expenditure of the funds. I'm not saying that. But I would hate to lump and categorize people as bad people. So I wanted to put that piece out there. We have looked at the P-card situation. Quite honestly, it was the first day, July 1st, my first day on the job, where Bob and I sat down. We were talking about this, and Bob had been thinking about this for prior to me arriving. But on that first day, we had made some decisions that we would look at the number of P-cards that are out there. As we reviewed it, about 10% of the staff of District 41 had a P-card. We felt like we needed to pull that back. And actually, there was already, prior to me ever stepping foot in District 41, 8 of those P-cards were already pulled back from science coordinators, I believe. So we're going to take that a step further, pulling back 18 cards total.
We're moving back.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We had 44 outstanding, let's say June 1st, July 1st. We're bringing that back. There'll be 18 cards in the hands of district.
Thank you.
It will be assistant principals, principals, superintendent, assistant superintendent, directors, and then the three guys that we have in the maintenance department. You know, they're running for a variety of things.
Yeah.
It's not like we have a big enough district where we can maintain inventories for fans or motors or whatever the case may be. So they typically might run for a Granger or a Home Depot or whatever the case may be. So that's there's 18 cards that we have planned that will be outstanding shortly, and that's a number we feel comfortable with.
Just those people, Bob, will have access to the card?
Correct.
Correct.
So we're going from 44 to 18?
Correct.
And the individuals Bob named will only be the ones who have access to those. The next piece we're doing, contrary to popular belief, there was no violation of the policy. Within the policy, it does not state that there is written approval. It does not speak to it. It is actually silent on that topic. So what we did was say we're going to look at it, and I've asked anybody who is spending, purchasing an item at $500 or more, they must have written approval by me or their direct supervisor, one of the two assistant supes, the directors. So that is going into place as we speak, and people are already doing that. Until we have a policy revision, all of those currently are going to the superintendent, because the policy currently states that the superintendent. All of our other policies say superintendent or designee. This is one that was missing that terminology, so we will stay true to the policy, and at this time I will be approving those until we can get it into the policy committee's hands to make that slight alteration and update a little bit of the language in there, but it's minor pieces there.
Five,
please.
500
per item or 500 over a period of time?
So so 500, they have to have approval for an item being 500 or more. So you have to send an email to me to get that prior approval. And then there's the next piece in there around $1,000 in a month. That will be also something that staff members will have to send me an email requesting an approval to go beyond the 1,000 and the rationale why. I then follow up with an email. Those must be attached with all the purchases, so when Bob and his team are reviewing them, he's able to see the paper trail that in the current situation I've approved them all. So in each situation, the 500 and the 1,000, there has to be approval from me at this current time, and then hopefully the next month we can hand that over to the assistant troops and the directors. My cabinet, all theirs come to me. So there is a check and balance system in place. For the superintendent, quite honestly, I don't use my P card. There's been one incident, and it was for negotiations, and those are legitimate purchases. So I have used it once, but for the superintendent, in most instances, superintendents don't use their P cards because others are doing the vast majority of the purchases within the district. So there is a check and balance system in place. Bob reviews every purchase in the district. Every purchase is going directly through him and his team. He knows them well. If there are issues that arise, he brings them directly to me, and then we have that conversation.
Paul, just a real quick question. You said that there's some changes you want to make to the policy. Again, it seems like
minor.
Minor.
Yeah.
When is that section of the policy scheduled to be reviewed?
It was just reviewed. We are going to put it on to. We're going to add it to the cycle.
Put it on the rotation.
We are because again, they're so minor. It is adding or designee. And there's one that just had some antiquated language within it. Julie was able to look at that. Just minor pieces, just so we can do the work of the district, so it's not all coming to me, so I'm having to approve everybody's purchases. That's micromanagement, and that's not what I want to do.
That seems like kind of an onerous
task. Yeah.
Right.
And Sam, when we reviewed this back in August, April of 2012, I remember we had a brief conversation around the types of purchases, and this brought us back to some changes we had approved through finance in the approval at a contract level, that the types of purchases for some ancillaries, textbooks, or support tools that we can't get from a publisher, for instance, so they have to be purchased by a private house or Amazon or something like that, go beyond the $1,000 a month. So we talked briefly about, are these numbers accurate? I don't want to have a discussion now, but I would put that on the table for policy committee to think about and do some reality check around that and whether or not that needs to be looked at, because we had talked about that briefly.
I do remember that. And Drew, you remember that the committee takes up a section at a time. However, we do look at individual policies when the need arises, and this will obviously be one of those policies that we will take up on our first meeting, and it'll be the natural course of the policy revisions. So we'll get there. It just might take a little more time. But obviously, Paul said that the practice is in place already for the anticipated changes that we'll be looking at.
Yeah, we've implemented. We're moving forward with these practices. Did I miss anything?
No, just to make a comment on the check register.
Please. Oh, thank you. I didn't miss.
We've added a column for description. It wasn't as much work as maybe we originally had anticipated. We had Skyward in here last week. They set up a template for us. So what we're going to do is just download that information monthly. We're going to add a column in there on description. It'll all be dropped into an Excel spreadsheet. I will have an opportunity to review it, whether I add to or delete from some language that's come right out of Skyward regarding language. I'll take a look at that. You'll be presented with it as we do our normal check bills. And then the following month, morning, we have our meetings on Monday evening. Tuesday morning, we'll be releasing that information to technology. They'll be posting it to the website. So
this is the sample you sent us?
Yeah, it's a sample of the rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we plan on implementing that. The bills that you have before you tonight are for through the month of June. So we'll start that. You're going to start to see bills at your next board meeting for the month of July. We're going to start it at that time. We just wanted you to see a template of what it's going to look like this evening.
Who puts the description in, Skyler?
Accounts payable, and I'll have the ability to add to or delete if I feel as though maybe there's too much detail.
Yeah.
Then I might make the decision to pull a little bit back, or if I feel as though it needs a little additional explanation, I'll do that also.
Okay. Anything else on?
I want to echo what you said in the beginning. I think when you just look at numbers and data, it's easy to start drawing conclusions about things. And I think most of us on the board travel at some point or another for a living. And when you look at some of the things that go on, there was nothing that popped out to me that was out of the ordinary or inappropriate. I can see how things happen. Even with we have a board policy that says you can't use numbers, you can't use reward points and things. When you go to make a reservation, it usually prompts you to say, please put in your reward number. If you do, then you're able to fill it out in a couple of seconds rather than having to fill out every page of the thing. So I don't think it's always just to get reward points if people do things like that. It's really to expedite travel. And if we look at it with the caliber of people we have and go with the presumption that these are good people, they're not doing anything wrong, it's easy to nitpick, but I think overall when I look at it, there was a sheer volume, and I think you all have addressed that really well with what you're going to do with the P-cards. Bringing it down to 18 is great. That's more than a 50% reduction in P-cards. I think what you've done, Bob, with putting the explanation at check register, it helps, and I will speak for the community when I say this as a new board member coming in. It helps on my education learning curve, so we'll do the same for the community. I think they're all positive steps, and I think it's been a good review. And it was a worthwhile effort, and it was a good review. And it was brought about, by a lot of different things, some things in the community, some in the forums and stuff, and the FOIA requests we talked about. But I think we're getting to a point where we've made some changes, and things look real positive. So I appreciate all the work you guys have done.
I just hold me accountable. Hold me accountable to those purchases. If you see pieces that are inappropriate, somewhere along the line, I approved it. Hold me accountable to those pieces. That's all I'm asking you.
Questions to get context for it, too.
Yep. And I'm pretty easy to get to a hold of. I'm more than willing to talk with anybody. Just hold me accountable for the purchases, and I'll hold my team accountable. I think that's a better way of operating from my perspective, as I wrote my first letter out to staff around perspectives. AYP, we just got these. This is a whole new thing, not AYP to me, but the timeliness of AYP from my world in Colorado to the world of Illinois. This is interesting. I'll catch myself there. We just got notification Saturday on AYP status. Churchill, because it is a Title I school, really, at the end of the day, AYP, the implications are only for title schools. And Churchill did not make it. So we've opened up Ben Franklin, but we're just in the process of getting those letters out to parents. We're meeting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to finalize those letters and get those out as quickly as possible. This would not be how I would like to do it, but we're still going to give our parents those 2 weeks that the state requires. However, it will bleed into the school year for some of the parents. So I just wanted to let you know we just received those. We'll be getting those out to the board very quickly. But I was surprised with their timeliness or lack thereof.
This is your
shocking.
This is year two of Churchill.
Yes, it is.
It'll be interesting to see the data because we were within almost the safe harbor last time. I just read in the Daily Herald today that District 203 has, hi, Carrie, board member from Tojuri, two schools, and 204. Yeah, so it's two schools for you.
So we believe the corrective action that's required falls under the work that we're doing at Churchill. So we're very confident that the state will accept our corrective action steps moving forward, and as we continue to improve the educational opportunities for all of our students in the district. So we're going to continue working on that, but that just arrived to us, and that's why you guys have not received it quite yet. I'll give that to you, though, quickly. Anything else on AYP? The engagement plan. For me, this is about, quite honestly, it continues the engagement, my overall engagement plan with the community, meeting with GIA, meeting with many different representatives throughout the district, parent groups, the local law enforcement. This will be one more step in my initial engagement plan, is to meet with Wheaton College, the leadership there. That will be a little bit more challenging to get a schedule with them, but also to meet with the Park District. That will be our first phase of the engagement plan, and then from there I'll be coming back to the board to say, what are your next steps, and who would like to join in those conversations that would continue. And what I'm looking for is partnerships. What we heard, some of the good pieces that came out of the Wheaton College conversation were how many similarities there are between the two parties. And I think we need to start building on the similarities rather than the differences, while still trying to address our issue of having students in portables throughout this district at every one of our schools. We have to face that. But I wanted to do it in a partnership, what's in it for both parties. And that's really my intent there.
And the conversations that we're having for Wheaton we're not moving forward on any land acquisition.
No.
We're
trying to open the door.
Trying to open the door for partnership and agreements, and in the future, whatever it is, we're just...
My
name is Paul, and I represent B41.
Yes, sir.
Well, I had sent a note to Paul in with that one attachment he had sent to us on the engagement discussion that we had directed him to organize. And one of the, one of the things that I was thinking about, and you guys were there too, because it was our last meeting, was that the final comment came from Wheaton College through Dale Kemp when he closed that public meeting and public participation. And I have not had a chance to do this, but I want to go back and listen to it, because there's language used that I think is the jumping off point. And it was kind of metaphorically, the hand was extended. Recognition, I think, of the critical facility needs we have, and I think that was the language he used. But to me, that's the natural stepping off point from this, because there was a recognition and an understanding, and so how might we restart that conversation? So I want to be mindful of not coming at this with another angle. It's not about that. It's us needing to close our resolution, and it's Paul, you being able to make some contact to Patrick's point, either now, future, whatever it might be. But he allowed for us to step back in. So
I absolutely agree, and that's what I plan to do: is step right back in, and then invite board members to join us in further conversations. One piece that I want to throw out to the board is a conversation around closed session. A recommendation to the board to think about moving closed session to the beginning of the board meeting. Oftentimes that closed session, you have some very intense issues that you need to deal with. And I know, as I've read almost every one of our board minutes from the last year, some of those meetings were going until 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night. And that's a tough time to make some really critical decisions on negotiations, on employment, or on legal matters. Three big issues. Not that everything else isn't very important to you, but as I have been wrestling with this in conversations with a couple other people, putting that out there, I know the history in District 41 has been that closed session is at the end, but I would put that out there for you guys to think about where you'd like to go with it and kind of move from there.
How was it handled before when you were in college?
So most districts in Colorado do an executive session prior to it. So you would start your executive session at 5:30, where you would have it's still an open to the public. So you have this conversation about the ongoings of the district. You would then go into closed session, and then at that time you'd get legal, personnel, or any other negotiation conversations, and then you would open into the public session at 7 o'clock. That's what we would do. And typically in Colorado, you'd open at 7 o'clock for a public session. And I know your work schedules at times don't allow that, and I know it's a little more, at times it can be very difficult. I appreciated the executive session because it was an opportunity to talk about many of the issues still in an open session, open format, but you'd still be able to have a conversation about what was occurring. That's not what I'm asking for right now. I am asking for a slight change to the closed portion.
I'd like to hear a little bit more mm-hmm. about how that was done, but when you... my initial gut reaction, knee-jerk reaction, you never go with knee-jerk reaction, of course, but my knee-jerk reaction is, if I was sitting on the other side of the table, I never know when you're going to be done, so I'm going to be milling around till 8:30, 9 o'clock, when you're done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So what we would commit to is that we would come out of closed session at 7:15, and if we needed to go back into closed session, we still have... the legal authority to go back into closed session at any time. But as I was reviewing again your minutes, your trend data says your closed session generally runs around 30 minutes. So you can plan for that while also giving yourself an opportunity to say, at 7:15 we're out here, because I agree with you, we don't want the public waiting around for everybody to come out of closed session. You agree that we're going to come back, and you would finish your regular board meetings, and we are going to return to closed session to finish negotiations or whatever it is. So I appreciate you bringing that. Thank you.
I just have to figure out how that affects the finance meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They go on.
They're already going long now.
Yeah. All the meetings.
We're
going to
make it start at 3:30.
Yeah. Yeah. So again,
we're certainly not going to do those at 10 o'clock. I can guarantee you that. So
that's just out there for conversation. The last piece for me is, once again, a celebration of the Hadley LMC, and I'm going to let Bob join in here right now. There was a PowerPoint running. If you have not seen it, it's an exciting opportunity for students and staff. As I'm looking back here, what an environment. That's a true 21st century environment for our students to see. Again, I wasn't here in the past, but seeing the photos of the library of old compared to the library of today, I get so excited for the students walking in there and that energy. We felt the energy. I was over there last week having a conversation with our custodians throughout the district. The energy was there with the custodians because they were so proud of this place. Even though they may not work in Hadley, they were so proud to be a part of Glen Ellyn and what was happening for our kids. The board has to be really proud of what you guys did to move that forward. It is a real absolute piece of art. And that's his baby. I can't believe I talked that long on his baby, because really...
Call me for tours.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, I mean, that's a good point. And this is what I want to... These are success stories that we want to push out to people that don't have kids at Hot. Yeah, an open house or, I don't know how we can do it. We can link with the village to put our link out there to say, hey, listen, you spent so much money to make this high school, and quotes from the janitors and quotes from the board and the students to say, this went really well. This was where some of your money went, and it was this, and it went to this, and thank you.
And your kids are benefiting today
and
tomorrow. Yeah. That's what I loved about it.
The pictures look great, but when you talk about what you missed, I think Drew said it, was that it looked the same now, before we started to do the work, that it did when you were back in Hadley.
Right, in the mid-70s.
Yeah, that it hit, that room had stayed the same all that time. So this is a major change.
Bob, on time?
Bob, we're done. We're on punch list. Today.
Bob, on budget?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll be under budget.
Mm-hmm. On time and under budget.
All the furniture was moved in this weekend.
Yep. They worked Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to get everything in there. Nice job. We're truly on punch list items, and we've got Hadley start up tomorrow morning, and that was important for us to get in there and let the parents and the kids see what an exciting space it really is.
And also the change in terms of the painting. Because I was over there while it was going on a couple times, and then I peeked in today, and just the refresh to the buildings, like our elementaries have felt, and was way overdue for Hadley. So it's nice to go.
Kudos to Bob and Dave and their entire team.
And great updates from Dave all summer, too.
Oh, man.
So thank him for that.
Anything else you want to add on those?
Nope, we're done.
All right, I'm done.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Board reports.
Well, I added a little bit during Karen's presentation on Team 21. We have a meeting coming up end of the month, and then we start in an Amy's here, too, with one of our parent reps. And I won't add anything else to that other than, please share your concerns, questions via me. I'll make sure that they get to Team 21 and get answered. So don't see it as waiting for me to update, but if you have questions, I can bring them to the meeting, and we start those at 4 o'clock now, right? The other thing I want to mention, and I want to welcome Terry Fielden, who is a board member from Naperville District 203, and is also on the Resolutions Committee for the IASB, and served as mine and Kristen Fitzgerald, who's a board member on his board, as the co-sponsor for Glen Ellyn District 41 Board and Naperville Community Unit School District 203 on the resolution. So today, which was fortuitous for our meeting, I got a letter from the Deputy Executive Director Ben Schwarm from IASB, who we get all the legal updates from. And I was just going on vacation on Friday, August 2nd, and Kristen was just finishing her vacation. And that was the night that the Resolutions Committee met to listen to rationale and testimony on the different resolutions. So Terry was good enough to read our statement, and we were adopted without reservation. In fact, he told me before the board meeting that there wasn't even any conversation. So if you remember, the resolution is around state mandates. So I'll just read what the Resolution Committee wrote. This resolution asks IASB to support modifications to the State Mandates Act in order to strengthen the information gathering on the part of the legislature when it is required to respond to legislation creating new mandates. In addition, the resolution asks that the same act also require periodic review of the mandates currently in place. The committee agreed with the submitting district's rationale. It was generally recognized that the legislative process does not adequately take into account the effects and costs of mandates. And so thank you, Terry, for being present for us. Maureen, I have a copy for you. And thank you to the board for supporting that. I think it's boards have a voice that we can use. And at the LEND meeting in September, I'll be talking with Peggy Agnos, who's the executive director, to see how we might not only get this passed, certainly at IASB, but also how to move some of this forward in a real concrete way with Sandra P. Host and Linda Chapalavia and some of the others. So I think this is good for the district. It's certainly good for us as taxpayers to add a level of requirement on what's already in there but is not followed through on. So thanks for your support.
Thank you, Terry. Anything you want to add?
Well, I was telling Erica, it was resolutions could be kind of the old back and forth. So this is my third mini meeting, but it's the only one I can ever recall where it's just presented. It was a motion and it was voted upon. So strong agreement within the committee before you talk about it. Very well done by both Erica and Chris.
I agree. Thank you. Thanks again. Anything else? Any other reports? Jewett Finance?
Thank you, Finance. We'll just real quick. We had our finance meeting earlier today. We discussed a number of things. We did the consultant performance review. We discussed the annual review of board policy 4.30, which is the operational service and revenues investment policy. We had a discussion on the tools are going on this HIP recommendation. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later in this meeting. We talked about the planning for for all the elementary school lab remodels. We had a we discussed some updates and some changes to the check register that Paula mentioned, and some changes to the FOIA law, which Bob has also implemented, and with the changes moving forward. It's pretty full. Pretty full.
Thank you, Drew. Anything else? I just have two quick things. Over the weekend, I attended the ISBA President's Workshop. It was an all-day thing. Eric, I think you had done that in the past as well. And just a couple of small takeaways. I was actually impressed and pleased that our district does so many things agenda-wise and meeting-wise, procedurally-wise, that these presenters from the ISBA are telling these other districts to do. So I'm comforted by that. And I did pick up a couple small things, very procedural things that I'll get out later, but I won't get into those now. And the other thing is to call everybody's attention to the ISBA Fall Dinner Meeting, which is October 29th at W.A. Johnson School in Bensonville. And I encourage everyone to go. I know I'm going to go. I'm not sure who else is.
Again?
October 29th.
It's Tuesday.
It's usually on a Tuesday night, dinner and a meeting and a presentation. And
is this the one that was canceled because of the weather?
It is the presentation that was canceled, the spring meeting speaker. Right, that's it. So I encourage everyone to go, and if you want to go, I know Maureen will assist us with our registration. Okay. Discussion items.
So we'll start off with planning for our elementary innovation labs. This is to discuss, for the board to discuss, the expenditure of $300,000 that are currently budgeted based off of tonight's approval of the budget. That would go for looking at soil samples, schematic designs, and hiring of a construction manager for labs. It is an initial discussion that Bob will kind of fill us in on the depth and the complexity around these issues. But one of the pieces that I want to continue highlighting, whatever work's done in our buildings will be aligned to any future expansion or construction. These are pieces like the Hadley Library that engage our students, that engage our community, and engage our staff into creating these truly flexible learning opportunities for students to continue with their project-based learning, to have opportunities to have panels come in and have conversations with students. These are classrooms. I know I've had individuals approach me and say, you know, if this STEM thing goes away in a number of years, what are you going to do with these classrooms? These are flexible classroom spaces. We're always going to need that. We're always going to be teaching science. These are pieces that are going to be with us long term. There is no... Bob has spoken to individuals and reiterated that these are a long-term solution, and quite honestly, these are a model for what we would want the next iteration of our classrooms to be. And as I've been able to tour all of the schools now, I think each school needs a little, an opportunity to see what Hadley sees, and our community to see what Hadley's going to be able to see on a daily basis. But I can't reiterate enough that this is part of a long-term plan. This is not just a sit here and nothing else gets accomplished. We will continue with my engagement and then with the board's engagement about the next steps to this. But with that, I'm going to hand it over to Bob to continue the conversation around these innovation flexible classroom spaces.
Okay, so we presented this earlier this evening at the Finance Committee, and we were looking for their support. and support with regards to allowing us to spend $300,000 out of next year's budget for architectural services, which would be schematic design of what the labs and the facilities will look like, soil testing, survey work, permitting, and so forth. Just very briefly, you each have a packet in front of you that gives you very sort of 50,000 foot a look at in terms of what the sites might look like with further development, what the budgets are, approximate budgets are, and then also the timeline. Remember, these are very rough type of numbers that have been developed, and they're going to need further development and revision as time goes on. They know, or the architects know, that our target is between $8 and $10 million of existing fund balances. That would be in addition to any capital projects that we do on an annual basis, and that is something we will continue to need to do. And you'll be getting those capital project recommendations in the fall as we proceed through the development. So the timeline is, it's kind of crucial right now. My belief is that we should start at Franklin School, and the reason for recommending that we start at Franklin is it really is our sort of quote-unquote easiest site for us to accomplish this work. If you recall, about 5 or 6 years ago, we did the underground stormwater detention project at Franklin, and that allows for, we built excess capacity into that structure that allows for approximately a 10,000 square foot addition. So that work is already in place, and I would tell you one of the most difficult things for us to get through permitting application and permitting and so forth is the stormwater phase. So that essentially has already been done, and that's why Franklin really is our recommended first spot to take a look. We would roll that out over the next 2 years then, which would include Lincoln, Churchill, and Forest Glen. Again, there'll be stormwater work needed, some site improvements, as well as development of the continued development of these stormwater or these innovation labs. Again, I'd just like to reiterate that in every meeting that we've had with our professional services, our architects, these are sites, or these are spaces within our buildings that will not go away if we move forward with the master facility question, if there's a referendum issue out there in 3, 4, or 5 years, or whatever that may be. This is essentially sort of a centralized starting point for further development of our facility. So whatever we do now will stay with us for a number of years. They are classrooms, so whether they're used for STEAM, innovation, whatever, what they are flexible learning spaces for our kids, and they will not go away. Again, what we're looking for now is discussion this evening to allow us to move forward with the planning process. And again, that will be with regard to engagement of our professional service vendors, architects, have soil borings done. We really feel as though with the scope and nature of this project, it's time to engage the services of a construction manager. You know, you're talking about $8 to $10 million worth of work over the next couple of years. I have typically run, and now Dave has run, sort of the annual capital projects that we do. This is a much more extensive, much more intricate, almost an operational type of procedure, because where these labs are going to be located and some of the recommended site work and facility work will be very precision oriented, and we really do need the expertise of a construction manager here. So tied into all this is our recommendation to allow us to spend the $300,000 that has been included in the budget that you have approved this evening. And I guess I'm available to answer any questions that you may have, but the focus of this evening is to have a discussion regarding the retaining of professional services, and then we would be looking for approval to actually move forward with these recommendations at our next meeting on August 26th.
Well, I wasn't at the finance meeting, so I'll just ask questions that may have already been asked, but When you say construction manager, what does that look like? Is it an annual contract? How much? What, is it a company or is it an individual? You know, what? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
A construction manager would be more than likely a company, probably a fairly large size company. And exactly what that will look like, I don't know. It might be a large firm that has an area that's dedicated to construction management. But typically, what we would be engaging the services of this company for initially would be to work with us, any architects, in developing the sort of the final designs of what these spaces would look like. They'll have the opportunity for them to have input into budget development. Let them review the work that the architects have put together. Are these numbers too high? Are they too low? And most importantly, really, is because of the nature of this work, you're talking about some pretty select work that needs to be done and done in a time frame so as to be as little disruptive to the school's a school year as possible. They would essentially, once we get to this point, be managing the day-to-day operations of the project. They would be an employee. It would be a contractor employed by the school district with what I would believe to be our best interest at heart, bringing things in under budget and on time with as little disruption to the school day / school year as we move forward. And yes, they would be an integral part of the construction that we do over the next couple of years. Just by the nature of the size and the scope, this is beyond what I believe is beyond the capabilities of staff that we currently have on staff.
So this would be from the day that, if this project gets approved, from that day till the last day of construction of all these projects.
More than likely, that would be the case. What we're looking for this year, though, is to spend about $80,000 as part of this $300,000 I told you has been budgeted already. That would be part of the money, and we would be engaging their services to just provide another lens with regards to the construction project itself, budget development, review of numbers, and in making sure that our timeline is workable. Because I engage the services of an architect. They're not the guys out in the field during the work.
It's really a project. I mean, you're using construction manager, but
it's project manager.
It's like project manager that I might work with.
Absolutely.
You know, to do oversight. And it's, I mean, in the recommendation, you talk about consultation services, construction management over 3 years at each of the elementary schools. So I know that on the timeline, it's the four buildings, but it's a 3-year cycle. And I know even at our facilities discussion, we talked a little bit at a high level of the disruption piece and how to manage that. You know,
especially
starting at one point, trying to capture the summer, and so that individual that within that organization would provide that insight to us, right?
They'll manage it.
Yeah.
So they will be accountable to the district in terms of how we move through a particular project.
Yeah.
You know, I call FGM up. Their involvement in a particular project is nothing more than usually a one or twice a week visit to the site to see how things are going. Now, I will tell you, FGM has always given us above and beyond that type of service. I call these guys up on a regular basis, and I mean, Ron and I have been on a site on a Friday evening, a Friday afternoon, or a Saturday or Sunday. Just to, you know, they have been at my beck and call when I need them; they're there. But you need somebody that truly does have the best interest of the district at heart here to manage the scope and size of project that we're anticipating doing here in the next couple of years. And some of the work, especially at Lincoln and Churchill, it's almost going to be like, you know, it'll have to be done with surgical precision because you're talking about affecting sort of the heartbeat of the building itself.
Well,
I
understand of the $300,000 is basically just kind of all the startup work before you would start. Out of the $300,000, $80,000 is allocated for the project manager, and so before we even break ground, the $80,000 that's going to the project manager is going to be for his involvement in the startup process in terms of getting everything started? Help me just walk me through it again.
Sure. Really, what we're looking to do are several pieces. This $300,000 involves basic fees to the to FGM, excuse me, of $170,000, and then $20,000 in allowances. So their total fee is $191,000. Then you're talking about the possibility of almost $80,000, and I don't know what those fees are going to look like. We're just estimating what they could look like. $80,000 for construction managers, and then you have soil testing work that needs to be done, and site surveys also need to be accomplished. So there's four pieces that are built into this $300,000 figure: architectural services, construction management, soil borings, and then, like I said, the site surveys, all done by different contractors.
And if we move forward with this, and we spent the $300,000, are all these projects going to be done? Are they going to be staggered?
No. 2000. The recommendation is 2014. We'll move forward with Franklin. Okay. Nice, clean site, easy to get done. And I think the opportunity to get done, you know, let's say we start the last day, the day after kids let out, certainly by mid-fall, late fall, we'll be ready to move into that space.
Okay.
The next summer is the one that will be prove to be the most difficult, and that is we need to make a decision. Will we do Churchill, Forestman, and Lincoln all in the same summer? Need to talk about that.
And that's where you're... Construction manager comes in place. I mean, yes. You know, there's eight balls in the air. Slide this one here, slide this one here. It's bigger than what we're used to.
Five times more than that, times the scope of the types of projects that we're accustomed to managing on our own. Significantly larger budget, much, much more difficult type of construction work going on. And we're kind of a lean machine. We don't have the extra staff that allows them to pull away from what typically their day looks like and just focus on construction management.
When we left our facilities workshop, we had done a priority, and I forget how many, 13 we ended up with, and then... And so, if there's a question about whether or not we had agreed to this conversation, what we had said is that we wanted to still pursue on some level how to build a new junior high to deal with the mobile classrooms. And the second one was moving forward on CMAS. That was the consensus. So I know as a part of it, and Joe's not here to speak to this, but he was, because this is some of the work that he does, was vehement about the need to have specific information in order to know how do we do this and can we. So that's this money that got built into the budget in order for us to have the kind of detail. And I know boards have, go back and forth. Do we spend it, do we not? And at this point, if we're still on the same page from where we were just less than a month ago, we said that STEAM Labs were where we wanted to move in direction. So what I hear you saying is that in order to get the information that we need as a board now to move forward in terms of further costs, more concrete information, that this is not a nice to have, it's a to have to.
I can't move forward without engaging these services.
You had said at the beginning of this meeting, out of next year's budget, I think you mean there was this year's
2014, budget. Yeah.
So this is in the budget already.
Correct.
This isn't something that we're adding to the budget. We talked about it already. I think it would be, you've done a remarkable job over the summer building out the Hadley space, but I think it would be ridiculous to assume that we would take the same staff and say, now build basically what amounts to is a quarter of a school. And by the way, do it where you're at right now and just try not to disrupt our days much. So you're going to need some sort of project manager. It's clear for that. I think another thing that was important is you said that this isn't going to require any referendum. This is money that we've been putting away specifically for that. And that as a board, one of our biggest responsibilities is to plan for the future and to protect the facilities and plan for those facilities and make sure, I think you said it the one time where you said the programs drive the facilities,
right.
And we're adopting those programs already, so we need to provide the facilities to do that. And the best part is we might call them STEM or STEAM labs now, but I think Dr. Gordon's already talked about this, that they're flexible learning spaces. So if STEM and STEAM isn't something that is, maybe change what that is in the future, it still allows us to use these areas for flexible spaces and better utilize, I think, the buildings we have today. And we all looked at these floor plans and we've gone through this over and over again. It's clear that some of this reconstruction, this is really a better use of the space. So,
I mean, case in point is that open space in Lincoln.
Yeah.
That sits there. When I walked through that, I was mildly surprised to see that space and the use of it. I mean, it's a great space that's being used by cubicles and other pieces, and that's no fault of the principal or the teachers, but it's such a good area. And I know somewhere in the 70s or 60s or whenever they built that, they had some vision for that, but I can't imagine the vision was for cubicles to be in there for the large number of kids who are in our schools. So that's the type of space.
Exactly.
It is. It's no one's fault. It's just there's good space in that facility. And the other piece is we have to look at the parking at Lincoln. I was over there again. Beautiful summer day does not quite match up to a fall afternoon trying to pick up students, trying to drop off students. But from what I've been told, again, secondhand, it sounds like it's a interesting task to try to pick up your child from the front of that building without being hit or trying to navigate through that. We have to look at that, and that's a piece that Bob and his team are. That would be a critical aspect of this plan, that we would look at some new parking in that area to increase the safety. So it's not just the classroom flexibility. You know, those are important. But safety also drives us. I mean, that is critical that we have safety there. And then some of the pathways. Again, looking at how the organization of that front main office, pretty maybe at some time, you know, in the past, but really usable, as you know, you don't have the great sight lines to see kids. Really takes a long time to get. Yeah, the circle, that little thing that you got there. Those are pieces that they would take care of. So it's beyond just the classrooms, trying to move our buildings into a better place long term.
You know, we had some really good questions from public participation, but parents also, around how the STEAM labs, the innovation labs, and this moving forward aligns even with the high schools. And those were good critical questions. And just, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, District 87 put up its kind of thumbnail PowerPoint for their master facility plan. And one of the things, I shared it with Paul, but Bob, you already had it. I know that you and Chris worked together. But one of the things I wanted to point out is that they have what they call their recommended project pathway, and in it is primary infrastructure, which for them is bricks and mortar type of thing, and then right behind that are science labs and classrooms. And, you know, in each of the schools, some have better facilities than others, depending on when they were built. And then after that is fine arts student and core spaces, and then physical education faculty areas, outdoor instruction. So, you know, when I read through this and I called someone that I know was on the facility committee to talk about it, that part of their impetus in moving this forward and laying out their structure is really around the classroom and science lab area, where they feel they're under either utilizing the space or because of the move in science now with, you know, more AP and that kind of thing, they have to upgrade their spaces. And part of this for them, at least at West and East, is even air conditioning. So they're calling it warm, dry, and sturdy, I think, is kind of their picture. So I want to put that on the table for the board, because I think at the end of our workshop conversation, the fact that we are able to prioritize and then not a month later look at what 87 is doing, you know, we get pushed sometimes as a district. Are we connecting, and is it going to make sense as we move our kids forward? And I think we're, you know, ahead of the conversation in this case. You know, they're there, you know, through their work, too.
To echo that, Karen and I had a great opportunity to meet with two former District 41 students who, absolutely unbelievable ladies, who came in, articulated the vision that they're trying to create and that teachers at Glenbard West are trying to create for our students. But what they're going to do is put on a STEM career day for our Hadley students, 8th grade students. But it's being driven by the students and these teachers who are passionate about it, ensuring that there are more kids at Glenbard West getting into the pathways earlier. Too often, especially our female students, are not looking for those pathways until it's in their sophomore year. And as you know, you really have to be very thoughtful about the course selection you're going to take to ensure that you're getting the classes and getting in the right prereqs. So what they're trying to do is get to our kids sooner, so they're even more engaged in these conversations than they've ever been before. But I just thought it was a real tribute to our district and the teachers at Glenbard West coming together to say, we've got a need. We know STEM is important. I mean, 83% of future careers are going to be in the STEAM fields. To me, I'm like, we have to have these pieces. No matter what you term them or call them, STEM education is going to be around for a long, long time. Again, whatever you call it, those career fields are out there. And that's not a poll stat that's out there for anybody to be able to research on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a collateral benefit. I think having these labs in our elementary schools and then moving it up into the, you know, the new science standards at Hadley, and that is, from a female perspective, just from my own experience with my daughter, who moved from wanting to teach math and science into then getting into bilingual education, which is fine, but not feeling like she got encouraged enough. And I think there's a really great opportunity. I think we talked a little bit about this at Team 21. Could we do some thinking around pre- and post-assessment around science interest? And are we, we know we want that guiding principle of the kids walk into these labs and they become curious and energized and scientists and mathematicians. I mean, that's the energy that we have already. I mean, we have great math and science, you know, faculty, but this opportunity is there for us to maybe shift some of that as a collateral benefit of this as well. So,
just have one other quick question. Again, I'm just looking at the numbers. If we were to do it all at one time, you know, we've got a high number of 16 million, I'm sorry, a low number of 16 million, high number of 23 million, round numbers, back to the round numbers.
What are you looking at, Jim?
I'm adding up the budget numbers.
I see the sheet you're looking at, but where specifically are
you? The base bid on the left.
I'm just adding up all the low numbers and all the high numbers.
Okay, because I see the base bid low is 12 and the high is 17, but then if you're adding are you adding the alternate?
I am.
You're adding everything in, all in?
They're all, okay. This is all a la carte.
Okay.
So these would be added to the base bid.
Okay.
So if we wanted to go forward with doing all things at one time, does the district have the funds to fund that? I mean, does that require a referendum?
Conversation,
true. We would ensure that this piece is done with fund balances. And that's why I asked the architects to give us all the options that are out there and give us from the smallest portion that we could do in the amount of money that it cost. Then we also asked for, if we had tons of money, what would it look like? So we've been asking those questions. But again, I think until we have somebody on site being able to do this work and drill down a little bit further for us, we won't be able to give you the exact hard numbers that everyone wants. It costs money to be able to do this.
No, I understand. And I understand the three other. I'm just thinking,
if we can fund this with the fund balances, which is the concept. I just want to make sure that was the concept.
That is the goal. That is what we would bring back to you. The only way we do this is with the fund balance money.
Okay. And that's what we talked about at our facilities workshop. Yes. Right.
That'd be the only. This would not require a referendum. What we bring forward to you would not require a fund referendum. It would only be using the fund balances and then some ongoing capital within Bob's budgets.
Which goes back to the whole policy around percent of fund balance, not wanting to go above or below that, and being able to use those funds to do capital projects, either bricks and mortar kind of things, sure, because we have to. Our roofs, we know those are sitting out there. But also this kind of work in order to move to align program facility.
So
what you're asking is this what we discussed at our facilities workshop, and is it aligned with where we ended up?
No, I think it is. I didn't think we had that much in fund balances in the high side, but if we do, that's great. I thought we're kind of getting to the...
Well, maybe not the add-ons, Drew.
Yeah.
Like Paul said, okay, he wanted to give us the picture.
Okay. I wanted the whole picture. I wanted to make sure that we were able to do this for the fund balances and then additional operating, capital operating.
Well, what I remember from our workshop was that we were going to go to 15 was our baseline, 15%. Mm-hmm. And that would, for real dollars, that would be around $8 million, is what I remember. Is that, that's fair?
Between 8 and 10, right.
Between, okay, between 8 and 10, okay. But as I have the same question that you have, in that if we're reading this right, first of all, what's the difference between the hard cost and the soft cost? And is the hard cost what we're referring to that we're going to use out of the fund balance, and is the soft cost budgeted somewhere else?
Hard cost would be what we would use out of fund balances, and that's for actual construction cost. Soft cost is something that I would find the money in the budget to spend on an annual basis.
Okay.
But soft cost might be, architectural fees, engineering fees, things of that nature.
That are already budgeted.
That I would budget.
Yeah, and like this year we have budgets for those.
Yes, correct.
And we'd be using those as part of this.
That's correct.
Okay, so we can, for intensive purposes of this conversation, we can just focus on the hard costs.
Yeah, yes. 9.6.
That's a great
9.6
question.
That's the low. And where do these numbers come from?
The architects.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons that we want to bring in a construction manager to give us more realistic numbers. I've been working with architectural firms for a number of years, and I will tell you that I have found them always to be above 20% high, 15% high, for one reason or another. That's why, over the years, we've always brought projects in under budget, because we can. And I think it's time for us to get a little more realistic in terms of our cost expectations. And just as importantly, our construction timelines. I tell you that I want to do a project from June 1st and have it ready by the middle or the end of November. I need someone there who's going to manage this project day in and day out. We don't have someone under contract to do that type of work now. That's the driving force behind wanting to bring in a construction manager.
So if we had, that's sort of the issue now is, with this $300,000, we would still not yet have a construction manager, but we would then need a construction manager to firm up these budgeted costs.
The $300,000 is for architectural services, construction manager services, soil borings,
and site surveys.
Yeah, it's for those four items. And to give you the whole picture, what I budgeted is $400,000 next year for professional services out of the operations and maintenance funds. $300,000 to do this work and $100,000 for capital projects. So I have $400,000 allocated in the O&M fund for these types of services.
Okay, but what you're eventually going to be asking for probably the next meeting is not just the $300,000, but approval of the entire project with the initial expense of $300,000?
No. The next meeting, the only thing that we would be asking for at the next meeting is that the board would vote on the $300,000 allocation. That's the only thing, because we need to understand the soil. We need to understand the surveying. We need to understand, does the project manager believe that these are costs that are accurate? That's all we're asking for.
So this is the next step we're taking?
Yes.
So we can start to see whether these numbers here make sense?
Yes.
And we talked about that we needed to take this step if we were going to go forward to do so.
Correct.
So it's nailing down that.
And then what's the drop dead date for the in terms of the timeline to have approval for this project to start construction in Franklin next summer?
We're there. Because it will take me 9 months to go through an application and permitting process to do anything with the village right now. Whatever we materially affect the outside of our buildings, not so much was with parking lots and additions, we have to go through a formal public hearing and application project. The village has to have public hearings. We would have public hearings. And to be able to go through that, get the bid documents out, you know, we typically go out to bid in December, bid return in January, we sign contracts in February, March. We're ready to start our work June 1st. That's only 9 months out, 10 months out.
So this is the same kind of steps we took for the Hadley project, right?
Absolutely.
And these numbers proved out to be lower when we looked at it, then you're coming in under what we thought it was going to
be. Correct. We'll be about $80,000 under budget on that project.
Which is almost 10%? 8 to 10%?
Yeah. And in that project, it took 18 months for us to develop.
Yeah.
I mean, we started meetings in February, March of 2012 to finish a project in August of 2013. Mm-hmm. You're 15, 16 months out. Now we're not just talking about the interior of a building, but we're talking about a 4,000 square foot addition.
Are there drawings that have been created of the alternatives as of yet? Or no?
No. What you have right now are schematic drawings to sort of 50,000 foot level of what we would do with implementation of the labs. And then any other sort of recommendations that
Absolutely.
Progressed over the past several years that we think we could address. If you'll notice at Lincoln and Churchill, what's driving the changes on those two facilities is that the Innovation Labs would essentially be constructed directly behind what would be new administrative offices. So if you're going to put the Innovation Labs in, you might as well address some ongoing issues that have been identified for a number of years with issues in those buildings.
But about the 300,000 buys those.
Yeah.
We're at a 10,000 foot level. It gives us the 5,000 foot level.
That's right. A great way of putting it.
Yeah.
So these drawings basically match up with the base bid numbers. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So in the last thing that for me anyway is. When we keep saying STEAM labs and STEM labs, and in my mind, and it may be just my mind, I think of my old high school chemistry lab. So I would like to see a picture, a 3D photo, of what a STEM lab today looks like. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be helpful for not only me, but a lot of people.
We had a PowerPoint on that.
Yeah, we did a year or so ago.
It's
not really about the shock and awe. We are looking to create innovative facilities for kids to learn in that really are a flexible classroom. Just to give an example, the two innovation labs that we're considering putting in 2 years at Lincoln, that will give us two more classrooms within that building, and we would expect, you know, over the past couple of years, we've discussed that portable that sits behind Lincoln. We expect with this recommendation that portable will go away. Now, you're not going to see that every site, but that's an example of what these labs will allow us to do. And it's a flexible classroom space.
I know what you're asking about. Maybe, Bob, if you could resend that PowerPoint, because there were some site visits done. But also, I thought FGM also did a little bit.
There was, and that we looked at that probably a year or so ago, I guess, Karen.
Yeah, I think that'll help.
Probably let a year ago this past spring.
Put up on the website maybe so folks could say this is what a steam lab might look like. All right, anything else on this?
We know what, so we come back on the 26th, we take a vote, but you know, maybe for John and for Joe, we, you know, in your update, you know, clarify again what we're
absolutely. I'll spend a little time on that one. The next one, and I'm going to hand it right over to Bob on this, is the TIF that the Glen Ellyn Village is seeking. It has substantially reduced from their initial request. But with that, I'll hand it over to you.
Sure. The Village of Glen Ellyn is proposing the Roosevelt Road, Park Avenue, TIF corridor that will essentially run from Route 53 to just east of Park, I believe right around Parkside on its westernmost reaches. It will include areas of District 41 on the north side of Roosevelt, District 89 on the south side of Roosevelt, and then, of course, District 87. The original proposal was to include the multi-residential housing along Roosevelt Road. That's in District 41 that has since changed. The village has decided to remove that area from the TIF district. The approximate EAV of that's in District 41 was $5.8 million. It's now been reduced to 2.8%. And overall, I did a quick calculation. It's like 0.25% of the EAV of the district. Much opposed to what occurred a couple of years ago with the downtown TIF, which was 4.65% of district-wide EAV.
So substantially different from...
Substantially different. Different project, different trust. We had a meeting back in July. We're meeting this evening. 87 is moving this evening. And then 89 will be meeting shortly. And I, as a member, or the district as a member of one of the eight community bodies or governmental bodies, sits on a joint review board, and we will be asked to give a vote on August 22nd. And so what I'm looking for this evening is really direction in terms of yes, we want to support this, or no, we don't want to support it. I would tell you that the districts previously have moved in unison. In other words, who's for it? If one's for it, we all vote for it. If not, we all vote against it. This is a much, much smaller scale type of development than why we took a negative approach when we were doing the downtown TIF. And just my preliminary thoughts is, yes, we would support it, given what we know at this time.
So we are seeking direction from the board so Bob can move forward with his conversations with the village.
And it's not something we have to vote on. We just have to give you direction.
We're just looking for direction.
So I think that in the meeting before this, the Finance Committee meeting, when you went through this too, I think it's reasonable for us to support it at this point.
At this point. And my meeting is not until next Monday, the 22nd. So we'll be having ongoing conversations. If something substantially changes between now and then, of course, I would go to Paul and we would contact the board and maybe we change that direction. I don't know. But this evening, my belief is we should support it.
And since the last time they took out the housing units that we talked about,
right,
which makes it a lot easier to support than it would have been.
Absolutely.
Well, the last TIF we didn't support, right? Did any of the... any of the area districts support that TIF?
No, 87 and 41 voted together and we did not support it. We read a letter that was provided to us by our council and it explained why we couldn't support it. Basically, I think we might have been a little more cooperative had the village been more cooperative in that we were looking for we were talking about disposition of accumulated surpluses, and really the village refused to even interact in a conversation about that. They were what we termed just rather uncooperative regarding our questions. So that's why we decided to vote against it 2 years ago. Different situation now, I believe.
And why is it different?
Well, just different because of the scope, the size of the district itself. We have not asked the village to support any type of amendment to their proposal, you know, looking for distribution of excess surpluses, or as Joe Pachinski termed, sort of like a tear-down fee or anything like that. It's truly, it really is just about commercial property along that corridor. And again, if you take our total EAV of $1.3 billion, and you're talking about $2.5 million EAV, very, very insignificant as opposed to what the previous TIF was.
So it won't be as big a financial impact on us, if that's why we're going to support, we would consider
that's
supporting
right.
this?
Yeah, the impact isn't nearly as significant as the proposed downtown or the existing downtown TIF district.
And there's no value this time. When I was looking over the notes from the last TIF, the issue around trying to get them to, I mean, it's a 23-year, it's a long period of time. The other TIF with the downtown had greater impact on us, and we were looking for some partnership on those dollars. And I think the other issue was, as I recall, a real lack of concern around a lack of communication from the village in terms of really how the TIF was going to affect taxpayers. And but there's no value in not supporting other than, I mean, value in supporting is that we be good partners and collaborate. And
I don't. Bob, is that true? I mean, is that true? Are we just going? What if the other school district that's most impacted it doesn't want to do this? It sounds to me, in your earlier comments, it's one for all for one kind of thing. And if, you know, are we just going to defer to them if they decide no?
Oh no, I don't say that we defer. I say maybe we have an additional conversation. I would certainly not make a decision without board direction, nor would I make it without hearing their story too. And my belief is they, because of the type of work that is proposed for the south side of Roosevelt Road, from what I'm hearing at least preliminarily, is that they're going to support it.
Okay.
Again, this is just what I'm hearing, sort of the chatter behind the scenes.
Okay.
But it is commercial property. I mean, there's that parcel on Nicole, how do you pronounce it?
Nicole, I think.
That is, you know, is ripe for some development, but it's not a huge spot. Like, you could put, I don't know, the big box store there or whatever. It has to be a smaller version. And so, and it sounds to me like, from what the village letter says, the TIF would encourage more options.
And I think that's the case, you know, especially with the motel that's located along Roosevelt Road, kind of dilapidated. I know that District 89 has a lot of homeless issues where a lot of their families end up there. So there's a lot of associated cost that they're incurring as a result of that space and what it's currently being used for.
But at the end of the day, any TIF district is then exempt from tax rolls for the other taxing bodies. It's not the entire properties, but it's the.
I believe that they refer to it as an incremental increase. It's frozen at a certain level in the year in which the TIF is created, and then, you know, the dollars are frozen at that level, and the dollars that are being requested by governmental agencies, those are effectively spread throughout the remaining taxpayers.
Which means more burden on the remaining
taxpayers.
Greater
burden on the other taxpayers.
So, in principle, any TIF would be a negative effect on any other residents of any other taxing bodies. Fair enough.
I would say property tax owners. It doesn't just have to be residents. It would be all the property tax owners outside of the TIF district.
Businesses.
No, I understand that. Like, so, in other words, every taxpayer in D41 would, if a TIF was created, wherever it was created, if it's within our district, then all the other remaining taxpayers would be negatively impacted.
That's correct.
Fair enough. So, to me, I mean, it's a more of a fundamental question of is it a big impact or a little impact? It's still an impact. If we say, oh, okay, that's okay, then maybe someone down the road will say, well, they don't really care, so we're going to do this. Or, you know, just it keeps building. So it's more of a
fundamental. Well, that was our frustration with the last TIF, because we did have stronger grounds to ask for some, you know, collaboration in terms of the dollars. It's a long, I mean...
Which didn't happen.
Right.
No,
and,
ultimately,
you know,
they have.
It's not going to roll off.
The power.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if, and that's just me talking, but I don't know if it's the time tonight to give approval or disapproval without, A, knowing what the other districts are going to do,
yeah.
And, B, maybe thinking about the overall picture and the fundamental effect of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll probably be talking to the business manager over in 87 tomorrow morning or sometime in the next day or two. Paul and I can certainly send out some communication. Again, the meeting isn't until the 22nd, so we have a little time,
mm-hmm.
And then you can always, Paul can always let me know how do you want me to vote, support or not support.
Didn't we also talk about we were support with qualification? Remember we had that, some conversation around that, just to get our needs out there?
I know that we would have been a little more willing to support the existing TIF downtown if they had been a little more willing for some conversation or dialogue.
I think that's
regarding
what they did. Remember we talked about,
I think that's what it was.
Support,
yeah,
with
was
this qualification,
they were
just
well
to be able to
in.
Voice at the JRD.
Yeah, they were locked in and unwilling to even discuss alternatives. Mm-hmm. I think that was our major disappointment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think you guys seem to need to.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I'll
make
an update.
That sounds good.
Okay. Upcoming meetings. August 26, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. An informal reception from 7 to 7:30 will precede the board meeting, and that will be for new staff recognition and maybe to
that
meet...
That would mean?
And to meet Dr. Gordon, as well as the new hires in the district. Is it? That's not it? This is all.
It's all about me.
This is the Paul Gordon. It's the Paul Gordon show. Okay.
All right.
September 9, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. at Central Services Office, and another informal reception from 7 to 7:30 will precede the board meeting. This one is for the new staff. All right. I knew I was somewhere. Okay. Other matters. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board? Hearing none. Public participation. Is there anyone that would like to address the board at this time? Mr. Cooper.
Yes, I want to finish up on where I was before, but before I do, I'll say to you, Dr. Gordon, I'll meet you somewhere in the middle about bad spending and bad people. I don't know the people of the district, so I will refrain from calling them bad people. There was definitely bad spending, though, and especially when I see multiple times of bad or poor spending by the same people, that's a problem. I hope that I was misunderstanding and you weren't exonerating what I had said earlier about all the board violations.
No, I was trying to make a distinction between our people,
yeah,
and the spending that you have concerns with. I was
right.
Just trying to make sure that there's a distinction there that I don't want.
Okay. Because I do expect that what I did bring up before, that those banners, especially the mails and things, that if they, if they were board violations, then they should be reimbursed to the people those dollar amounts. And I won't change my thoughts on that, and I'll get even more intense on that. I have a couple questions first before I go ahead and get into my next couple comments. Some things that we need to talk about or throw out there for down the road. Why are taxpayers paying for the TRS or whatever we call it, retirement? For administrators, I saw recently that one of the former board members wasn't even aware that they were paying that. I understand that the superintendent gets that covered and fine and dandy. As far as all the other administrators, it's unacceptable. I haven't FOIA'd for this yet, but really need to know about the cost of getting substitutes for covering for all those conference days and times where teachers are out. I really need to know, because we're paying people to do things that they're not around for, and we're paying someone else to go ahead and cover, and that's just not good. We're going to be coming up soon to the IASB conference that got written up last year. I hope that we have learned a lesson from the publicity from last year and don't reattempt a $2,300 dinner, whatever that was. And once I get back to my points, real quickly here. There are also hundreds of dollars in donations and flowers from Amlin that should not have been taxpayer financed or funded. The Director of Student Services made a purchase at Office Depot that included many sets of Burt's Bees. What that's got to do with the school district, I don't know. Okay? Maybe they thought that it wasn't going to be seen, but it was seen. That's the kind of thing that just isn't acceptable. $1,000 in hotel rooms and limos for speakers on Institute Day.
30 seconds, Jeff.
We're also paying for membership for organizations for teachers and administrators. I don't understand as a taxpayer why the teachers and administrators aren't, or at least the teachers, why they aren't paying for their own memberships and that they can itemize these things on their own taxes. I can't fathom that they're going ahead and paying that, or that we're paying that. Many missing receipts, which is another violation, including an almost $300 dinner charged by the former board president.
That's time. That's time, Jeff. Could you sum up, please?
Yeah, I'll get to the end of what I want to say here. We need some change. I'll just give it the last sentence. We need change, and we deserve protection by the board from what has been going on. I was going to say the administration. It's not just the administration. But we need protection. The taxpayers need protection by the board for this bad and egregious spending that, you know, we talked about weeds. It is weeds after, you know, talking about a budget thing. But it's still every penny is important. As a business owner for 30-something years, every penny is important. I have a tax bill coming up in 2 weeks. I'm going to have to pay. It's a good thing the meeting's not the night that I write the check. It hurts. And I guess last sentence, and I'll shut up. There are a lot of people in this district, especially in the administration, that don't have to bear the brunt of the activities that cause the tax to be so high in this town because they don't live in that district. They need to appreciate the ones that do and the ones that do need to pay debt.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you for hearing me.
You asked a few questions there, and I think we could probably find some answers to some of those questions if appropriate. If not, then we'll just have to go from there. So, but thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Did you guys fill out your sheets, please? Can you do that? Thank you. Can you? Mrs. Clark, you can go first. Can you tell us your name? And you can certainly sit.
All right. My sheet is Stephanie Clark. I just wanted to comment on the $300,000 that we're talking about for the, what are they called now, simulation labs. The community, ultimately, we're talking about $10 million. I mean, I know we're rolling on $300,000, but the plan is going to be $10 million. And I just ask that the board reconsider the spending. My concern is it fiscally responsible when we don't have a long-term fiscal use plan? I know we had one, it didn't really work out, and I feel like we're rushing to come up with something that isn't really necessary. I'm an engineer, I love math and science, studied engineering in college, and I understand the value of it, but the fact of the matter is, you know, the goal of elementary school, I think, is to provide a solid foundation for education, a love of learning. Even engineers, scientists, mathematicians have to learn how to read and write. And I think you need to make all sorts of learning available to kids, not just science. And it seems that, and not everyone's going to be an engineer. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, there are engineers. And the STEAM lab to me seems like a nice to have. If we had the money, this would be a great thing to have. But it's not that. There was a dad who came here in this exact room who's an engineer, an expert in STEAM, and he even said, you don't have to have a fancy lab. STEAM is a way of teaching. It's a way of teaching kids. It's a way of reaching to them with math and science in different ways, problem-based learning. That resonates with me. I don't know that we have to rush to build these labs when we don't have a long-term plan. I guess I want to ask the board, what are our priorities as a district? Are we addressing our priorities? And I'm not just talking about facilities. I, for for tonight, we need to get rid of portables, that they're not the best learning environment. All the kindergarten was thrown out a while ago when we were talking about think tank because of the rigor of the Common Core. We have to get all the kindergarten. And now all of a sudden, it seems like our priority is STEAM labs. I heard somebody say that we've been saving us $8 to $10 million to build STEAM labs. That's the first I heard that. I don't know if that's really true, but
1 minute, Steph.
Okay, sorry. And then we're talking about flexible learning environments and not necessarily just STEAM labs, but have we considered other plans? Maybe build on the one school, use the $8 to $10 million, build on the one school that needs it the most. Have we asked for any input from the community, maybe on a small scale? I know the park district's done that, where they do a survey just with a select amount of the community. My concern is down the road, I know we've talked about a referendum for our long-term facility solution, and I feel like community members are going to say, well, we spent $8 to $10 million doing this. Why didn't we put that $8 to $10 million into our long-term plan? We had to build these fancy labs, but yet my second grader at Lincoln is looking to be a portable next year, so we can build these labs, I think. I just worry that it could backfire down the road. Maybe you guys think nothing's ever going to happen anyway, so let's do what we can with this money, but I just worry that we're just rushing for something that's nice to have and not necessary, and it is a lot of money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No? Okay. Adjourn to closed session. Board has determined the need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their... Sorry. The district and its employees or their representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district, or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ellis, second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. No action will be taken when the board returns to open session.